6:30 and again at 11:45 on 990 Ave Maria Radio. This is full-time Catholic radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit. Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
And a good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta, thanking you once again for being with me as we talk about the things that matter most. You may have heard the Illinois Attorney General issued a report saying that nearly 2,000 persons were victims of clergy sex abuse over a 70-year span. And the rub of it is that the church the diocese in Illinois had only reported about roughly 25% of that of those numbers. So it's not clear what's going on here, unfortunately. Otherwise, this report is similar to what we've seen before. The vast majority of cases are old. But we're going to talk it over with Matthew Bunsen because, look, this is unfortunately a burden we're going to have to be carrying. When Scripture says, bear one another's burdens, this is one of the things it means. It means you can't escape the problems that your brothers and sisters have gotten into. And you're a Catholic, you have to bear the name, right? So we're going to talk it over with Matthew. Now, there's some other interesting news items out there, one of them being a possible discovery of an incorrupt body. This is a fascinating story, and it's just in the earliest stages of discovery. So we'll bring that up as well with Matthew, and then we'll take a look at the obscene satirical group, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, why the Los Angeles Dodgers decided to let them perform, you might say, and then said no, and then re-invited them. It's a strange story. We'll talk about it. Also today, coming up in the second hour, we'll look at Christian heroes who have stood against Islam over the centuries, and my guest Raymond Ibrahim will be with us to go over some of the fascinating stories, and these are heroic stories that are not that well known in the Western Church, so you'll enjoy it. But first, let's get to today's headlines.
Thanks, Al. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Wednesday, May 24th. It's the Feast of Our Lady, Help of Christians. Today's news brought to you by Charity Mobile, supporting pro-life and Catholic causes at CharityMobile.com. An 80-year-old man has been arrested in Mexico for attacking an archbishop with a knife. The man allegedly tried to kill Archbishop Faustino Armendariz in the sacristy after noon mass. After the failed murder attempt, Armendariz took to Twitter to thank God, the Most Holy Virgin, the Immaculate Conception, and the Holy Martyrs. The White House and House Republicans are still far apart in a number of places on the debt ceiling bill.
There's differences. We know where it's at. You have to spend less than you spent last year. That's not that difficult to do. But in Washington, somehow, that is a problem.
Speaker Kevin McCarthy saying he's sending his team to the White House to continue negotiations. The Republican said he believes an agreement is still possible before the June deadline, but he said Democrats are unwilling to spend less next year than what was spent last year. He slammed President Biden for waiting nearly 100 days to come to the negotiating table. The South Carolina Senate has passed a bill banning women in the state from getting abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy. The legislation passing Tuesday will head to the desk of Governor Henry McMaster, who said he will sign it. However, the ban is likely to be challenged in court by abortion rights activists.
The man who allegedly slammed into a security barrier near the White House with a U-Haul truck will remain in custody. The 19-year-old made his first appearance in court ahead of his detention hearing next week. Prosecutors say the man is not a U.S. citizen or a lawful permanent resident. The man reportedly told the Secret Service that his goal was to get to the White House, seize power, and be put in charge of the nation. He had no weapons. From your AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta, and with me right now is Dr. Matthew Bunsen, executive editor and Washington bureau chief for EWTN News and a senior fellow at the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology. He's authored or co-authored more than 50 books, including the first English language biography of Pope Francis and the Encyclopedia of Catholic History. You can follow him on Twitter at Matt Bunsen. And Register Radio airs Saturdays at 4 p.m., Sundays at 11 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio. Matthew, good to have you back.
Always a privilege.
The story that's getting a lot of attention right now deals with the Illinois Attorney General report. And what's most vexing about this story, besides the fact that it reports some terrible things, mm-hmm. is the claim that the number of the number of allegations that they're dealing with is quadrupled what the church supposedly turned in. And I'm wondering how that can be. Do you know what that's about?
Yeah, I noticed that the Chicago Archdiocese focused very heavily on that. They noted, for example, two of the dioceses, Chicago and Joliet, posted a list of what they said were substantiated sexual abuse allegations on their site. They had like 103 alleged abusers. The report states that the diocese has closed 334, but the report itself then balloons up to 451.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that there are efforts now to explain the discrepancy, in part because it makes the church, and this is a broad thing, look either dishonest or incompetent.
Right.
And so I think part of the question is going to be what is undisclosed, what were those that belonged to religious communities, religious congregations, and
right.
orders?
Right, that's what I was going to ask.
Exactly.
Do we have any idea, could the discrepancy be attributed to religious orders?
That seems to be what one of the arguments is being made here. It's a significant discrepancy between the two,
mm-hmm.
and I expect that at some point this will get resolved. But in the meantime, I think there are a lot of questions about that.
Yeah. Anything else unusual about this report? These reports are necessary. People want an accounting. These are terrible crimes. Many of them are beyond the statute of limitations, so there'll be no legal justice for victims. We've seen many of these in the past, and the trajectory looks the same. The incidents peak in the 70s and 80s.
That's right.
And then they scale off very quickly.
There are a few things, too, that are of note here. It is consistent with the reporting that we have seen throughout this whole scandal. As you note, this is a period of increase, and then it levels off. Now, the overall period that's involved here is essentially a period from 1950 through 2019. Now, that's significant in itself because some of the initial reports, as we know, you and I have talked about this for well over a decade now.
Yeah.
And the initial, I've been covering this since it broke in 2000.
Yeah.
So what we're seeing now is the ability to canvas and to go through all of the files and the cases up to what is now a very contemporary, if not immediately current time period. So that adds to the numbers as well. However, in this 70-year period, we have 451 clerics and religious brothers. That's significant, as we were just discussing, with 1,997 victims. Now, that is just horrifying, even if you try to spread this out over a 70-year period.
Right.
And then
right.
we can break it down by diocese, and the dioceses are very consistent, too. We would expect a larger number for the Archdiocese of Chicago. Why? Because it is the largest archdiocese in the whole state. Then we break it down into smaller numbers. Joliet, for example, is 51, Peoria 43, or 69 in Joliet, 51 in Peoria, 43 in Belleville, 32. So you can see the pattern here, mm-hmm. that these smaller dioceses have cases, but again, this is spread out over 70 years. Now, as is noted, the number is higher than 451 because some of the accused priests actually served in more than one diocese in number of cases. Now, the other thing that's important to note, and this was picked up on by Bishop Thomas Papraki, and he's not saying this in a defensive way, but that you can chart these cases that there has been a massive decline in abuse allegations over these years. And what it means is that the measures that have been put in place, thank heavens, have proven to be very effective. Now, one case today is still far too many. And we cannot in any way underplay or dismiss the immensity of the suffering of the victims in this scandal and in this terrible, long-standing problem.
No.
But the church now is a model for how to provide institutional reform and to create a safe environment. It's why so many secular institutions have come to the church to figure out how we do this, because we have proven to be very good at it.
Yeah.
And thank heavens. Now, it has been a long and painful process. And as Bishop Papraki notes, the report helps Catholics sustain the vigilance that we need to have. The other thing that did jump out is that when this was released, each diocese, the Attorney General of Illinois made this point, Kwame Raoul, that each diocese cooperated fully with the investigation. And the report also makes note of the fact that significant reforms have been made. And now, there's obviously a lot of criticism for past leadership, and I suspect that we'll see efforts to demonize one or two leaders in particular.
Mm-hmm.
But the level of cooperation was noted in this report, and I think that's important also for everyone to understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got it. We are as cooperative as we possibly can be now with authorities.
Yeah. Yeah. No, like I said, these stories are always troubling. But it looks as though we have a pretty homogeneous picture of what's happened over this 50, 70 years. And I think it's something to keep in mind, too, is when people get nostalgic about the past, and they think things were so much better before the Second Vatican Council, or you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The truth is, there was a lot of mess back then too, and of course we didn't know it.
That's right.
But we should. I can remember talking to Father Groeschel about this back in 2002. In fact, because we had just gotten together with a number of people in Philadelphia, and we were hoping to come up with a media response to the Boston Globe. And I said to him, well, I'm just curious, Father, what kind of, when you were in seminary, what kind of training, what kind of teaching did you have on dealing with your sexuality and, you know, maintaining the gift of celibacy? And he said, oh, we never talked about it.
Right.
So
right. The effort at human formation, the pillars that were all very, the program for priestly formation, the PPF and all of that, we have made leaps and bounds in
yep.
terms of understanding that. And we have to always be aware, too, of the important historical context. And this in no way excuses what happened, but We have to understand what happened and why in order to be vigilant, as Bishop Papraki notes, and also to make sure this doesn't happen again. And part of that is that the entire approach to these cases was very different 40, 50 years ago,
mm-hmm.
In which somebody who was an abuser was put under care, psychiatric care, moved around because a psychiatrist at the time would say, well, he's safe, he's under care.
Yep.
And then you'd have district attorneys and others who would refuse to prosecute or to open criminal cases,
right,
out of this false sense of trying to protect the church.
Right.
And all they were doing was creating the circumstances for the disaster that befell us and perpetuating the suffering of victims.
Yeah.
And all of this is now clearly documented, and it's something that we've learned a great deal from. In a report like this, though, we also have to brace ourselves that we're going to be seeing many more similar reports like this coming out in these coming years, because attorneys general all over the country are doing their own reports. We're still waiting on a number of different reports from different states.
Well, again, this is something that I think we'll get it cleared up, and I think our performance, as you mentioned earlier, our performance has gotten so much better, and hopefully we'll make a full accounting to the degree possible and move on. The church has been, unfortunately, it's become a light of how to do this right. It was a shame that we had to be put in that position, but we put ourselves in that position, I guess. So let me go to something else, which, again, is tolerated now. The Los Angeles Dodgers have decided they're going to go back and honor these drag queen nuns who are, you know, disgracing real religious sisters. What do you know about that story?
Yeah, this all started when the Los Angeles Dodgers initially announced that they're going to have a pride event, and I think it's on June 16th, and initially invited an organization, the LA chapter, so this is a broader organization, so-called, of what is known as the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Now, I think you're very familiar with them. They've been around for a long time.
Right.
And they are, not to put it too finely, a seriously, toxically anti-Catholic group that mocks nuns and mocks the Catholic faith.
Yep.
And the sacraments and the Eucharist in particular, and Christ and everything that is Catholic. There was an uproar that they were going to be included and honored at this LGBTQ Pride Night game against the San Francisco Giants at Dodger Stadium in June. And the Dodgers, in the face of this criticism, disinvited them and then caved and reinvited them. So we can pick that up.
Yeah, we'll take it up on the other side. Good heavens, man. Now you've managed to get everybody angry at you.
So, as always.
Hold it there, Matthew. We'll come back, continue the conversation. Dr. Matthew Bunsen, my guest. We'll pick up on this LA Dodgers reversing course and now going back to honor the anti-Catholic drag group at the Pride Night game.
Congratulations to the Father Gabriel Richard High School Class of 2023. Collectively, you have earned $15.4 million in merit scholarships. You have received offers of admission to top universities, and what impresses us most is the thoughtfulness and maturity with which you have made your decisions. No matter where you are going next, we know you will take with you all that you have learned at FGR and strive to love God, love others, love learning, and pursue excellence. May God bless you always.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic help, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIKE-US1.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school.
Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
Resetting your password, unsubscribing from emails, printing anything. Why are simple things sometimes so complicated? Thankfully, with an auto owner's insurance independent agent, getting the right coverage for your business doesn't have to be one of them. So you can get back to more important things, like learning how that printer works. That's simple human sense.
Call Choice Insurance Agency at 734-641-4200.
This time of year, the flowers are blooming, the trees are blossoming. God's whole creation is singing in harmony, and at Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, it's Ram season. They have lease offers that include new Ram Crew Cab 4x4s for as low as $339 per month. This is the truck that won multiple Motor Trend Truck of the Year awards. Come see the selection of all the vehicles Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram has to offer on their loaded 10 acres. Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram will treat you with the dignity and respect you deserve. Or shop online at PinckneyChrysler.com.
This week on Christ is the Answer, Father John talks about Jesus as the Good Shepherd. It's hard sometimes to wrap our brain around the parable of the Good Shepherd. What shepherd would be so desperate to leave their flock of 99 sheep to go after the foolish one that ran off into danger? This week, Father John wants to help us understand that no matter how far we've strayed, Jesus is there to help bring us back into the fold. Tune in for Christ is the Answer, Monday through Fridays at 11 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
In Morse code, the sequence SOS is a distress call when someone's in trouble. It's been said that SOS stands for Save Our Souls. Well, right now, the world is in deep trouble, and we're putting out an SOS call for help. Will you answer the call? St. Paul Evangelization has hundreds of teams of evangelists that go out and share the good news with souls that are in danger of being lost. Visit streetevangelization.com and find a team near you so you can answer that distress call.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me, Dr. Matthew Bunsen. We're, again, looking over a number of stories of interest to Catholics. Last segment, we closed off in the middle of the conversation about the Los Angeles Dodgers. They had this self-described leading edge order of queer and trans nuns. This group is well known. They have a long history of satirizing the Catholic faith, obscenely satirizing the Catholic faith. And the LA Dodgers decided to give them a privileged place in the Pride Night game. Then they got a lot of blowback, people angry, so they disinvited the group. And then they got a lot of blowback, and they decided to reinvite the group, which, from a management point of view, is suicidal and stupid. Look, make your decision and take your lumps, but don't go back and forth on something like this. It's just terrible. So what else can you tell me about it?
Well, this is a reminder, of course, of the now, I don't want to say legendary, but the cultural moment that was with Bud Light.
Oh, yeah.
Involving a trans person who was feted by Bud Light. And, of course, it launched a firestorm of controversy and has led to severe financial implications for the corporation involved with all of this.
Yeah.
But we're seeing also, we need to note, the Target has wandered also now into a lot of controversy, supposedly selling satanic trans gear and that sort of thing.
Yeah, for toddlers.
Right.
I couldn't believe it.
Yes.
Toddlers.
For toddlers. And then there are various iterations of this with Adidas and others. The Dodgers, in this case, as you said, made what I think will be a fatal mistake of making a decision, rethinking it, making another decision, caving under pressure, and then making the worst possible decision, which is now to draw even more attention to this event and this particular organization. By way of some history, the Catholic News Agency back in 2016, and this is a very helpful reminder how far things have come in just, what now, 7 years. In September of 2016, Dodger Stadium was the host of, for the Dodgers, Catholic Night.
Wow.
When there was a game hosted, the Dodgers hosted the San Diego Padres, and Catholics from all over the Tri-County Archdiocese of Los Angeles attended. So in attendance, for example, Bishop Robert Barron, then the auxiliary bishop in Los Angeles. So we can go all the way back to people like Vin Scully, who is a devout Catholic. We have as well, not in the history of the Dodgers, they had a nun night. Where sisters were invited.
Well,
they're inviting some kind of a sister to this, but it's a very different breed of sister, as they call themselves, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. They describe themselves as, quote, a leading edge order of queer and trans nuns. And again, I would caution your audience that if you begin searching online for images of this organization and what they do, please be prepared to be genuinely horrified at what you will find at no little effort to find it.
Yeah,
I really want to stress that, because there are a lot of people who are posting things on Twitter and in social media, just basic photos and footage of what they do publicly.
Yeah,
and for any serious Catholic, this is horrendously offensive.
It is. It's obscene. It disgraces, those women who should be honored. I'm surprised it's had the staying power that it's had. I remember when I was first exposed to this group, quite a long time ago now, before I was Catholic, in fact, and I thought, that's a crazy, what a crackpot bunch, you know. But they apparently have made this, they've made themselves a regular presence in pride parades over the years, and now they're trying to take their place as, you know, worthy of being honored in the mainstream culture.
That's right.
This is a big shift in America's conscience.
That's right, and it has taken place in just a few years. And we can go back to Obergefell, we can go back to Bostock, but Obergefell in particular, I think, in so many ways, culturally opened the floodgates to a heightened presence in culture. And we have seen an over, especially I would say in the last 2 years, we have seen a very concerted effort, millions and millions of dollars being spent in ad campaigns.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons why corporations, I think, have made this decision to go all in. Woke capitalism. They see this as a transformational moment.
Yeah.
But it's why Disney Plus and others, however, are really struggling financially. Now, there is a price to be paid, as Bud Light has discovered. But we're also seeing in this particular moment of this incident involving the Dodgers, and this is part of sports too, that they're also all in terms of this what they see as a transformational moment, and they are willing now to invite a group that is demonstrably and clearly anti-Catholic and anti-religion, and that in some ways is new, that they are willing to connect themselves so directly with what is clear hatred of the Catholic Church and Christian belief.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure where we go from here.
Well, I would sure hope this is an opportunity for our bishops to make it clear to the leaders of the Los Angeles Dodgers, to their upper management, that if this is the game they want to play, Catholics, there are a lot of Catholics who love the Dodgers.
Right.
And guess what? They'll have less reason to love the Dodgers in the future.
Right.
And if we made a special effort in one particular archdiocese, major archdiocese like L.A., we made a real strenuous effort to hurt the revenue of the L.A. Dodgers, that would send a strong signal throughout the nation. But we need leadership to do it.
That's
we need
right.
to have people of moral authority who can step forward and lead. Because economic boycotts are very difficult, and you know they're often thrown out kind of loosely and not monitored. But I would think that you know we'd be able to, maybe Archbishop Gomez would want to take this up. I would hope so.
Well, the Archdiocese has issued what I thought was a very good statement. He talks about that he's calling on all Catholics and people of goodwill, and that I'm going to come back to that in a minute, to stand against bigotry and hate in any form. And then he says that the decision to honor a group that clearly mocks the Catholic faith and makes light of the sincere and holy vocations of our women religious, who are an integral part of our church, is what has caused disappointment, concern, anger, and dismay from our Catholic community. Mm-hmm. And it's this visceral hatred of nuns and the mockery of nuns. But I think the Archbishop is also hitting on something that we need to focus on, too. He's calling on Catholics, but people of goodwill. The average person is very fair. And I think they look at an organization like this, and I'm not necessarily—I can't say they're going to be horrified, because at this point, it's almost impossible to be shocked by a lot of things, what we see on a daily basis, especially in social media. But I think this goes back to the basic unfairness of this, that it is open season on the Catholic Church and Christians and believers and religion. And any effort to defend ourselves is simply dismissed, as we're seeing the Dodgers do. There's not even an effort to find a compromise. I don't know what sort of discussions might have happened behind closed doors, but suddenly the Dodgers caved to what we know was brutal pressure from that movement.
Yeah, and that movement is well organized and well funded, and I think that's why we need to get smart about these kind of things. We're no longer living in a culture that is even neutral towards us. We've got a culture now that is tipping hostile towards us.
That's right.
And the abuse crisis has empowered them and given them courage. We have a lot of mess in our community, and so they're taking advantage of that. I have to say, though, I've known many homosexual men and women over the years. They were committed to living a homosexual life. They would find this appalling. This is not. I had a family member, for instance, who would have been appalled by this. And
I agree. So, and it comes at a time. We just had this new grand jury report. We're still dealing with the fallout from the Pennsylvania grand jury and the whole of the abuse crisis. And it also comes at a moment when we have a new survey on American religiosity from the University of Chicago on the General Social Survey.
Yeah, I saw that.
That finds only about half of Americans now say they are certain that God exists.
Yeah.
And while religious attendance has declined, many Americans, as this survey says, still pray several times a day. So what we're seeing is two things. One, a decline in the overall belief and certainty that God exists, which opens the floodgates for a very different life. But then, with the declines in religious attendance, even though people say they still pray, it is the growing, I won't say triumph, but the trend continues for those who say, well, I'm spiritual but not religious, which means that they're probably much more disposed to seeing or at least tolerating the type of toxic anti-Catholic, anti-religious institutional antics and hatred that we're seeing in society. Because, well, I don't really need an organized religion. I can pray anywhere. And what their prayer life looks like, I can't judge. But I think this is something that we also need to be aware of as we're trying to craft strategies and approaches pastorally and spiritually to help people understand why this is so significant.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, this is, I'm with you. This is a time for clear focus, we need clear leadership, but we need great patience and grace to move through these challenges. I'm wondering, Matthew, we hadn't scheduled it, but I'm wondering, can you stay another segment?
Yes, I can.
Okay. We're going to continue with Dr. Matthew Bunsen. There are a number of other stories here that I wanted to look at. For instance, one of them being... an archbishop, there was a murder attempt on the archbishop in Mexico. The 80-year-old man tries to kill the archbishop. We'll find out a little bit about that. And then we've got other stories, too. In Nicaragua, there's also a claim that we may have discovered an incorrupt body of Sister Wilhelmina Lancaster. So we'll talk about that story. So stay with us. We've got a lot of interesting things to go to.
Arbor Women Health wants to invite you to their Flourish fundraiser at the striking St. John's Resort in Plymouth, June 15th. The dinner will be highlighted by a unique performance from award-winning Broadway actor J. Mark McVeigh, who played Jean Valjean in Les Miserables. At a time when Michigan has become a sanctuary for abortion, Arbor Women is a sanctuary for life. Help Arbor Women continue to provide free services like ultrasounds and counseling by accepting their invitation. For details and tickets, go to arborwomen.org.
Detroit Catholic Central High School would like to welcome the 235 members of the class of 2023 to the Catholic Central Alumni Association. You're joining more than 17,000 men who have come before you and are now charged with taking the lessons of goodness, discipline, and knowledge forward into the world. God bless you and thank you for allowing CC to be a part of your journey. Learn more at CatholicCentral.net. That's CatholicCentral.net.
Spring in the mowing season with a new Cub Cadet lawn tractor from Weingarts. We've been helping families like yours choose the right power equipment since 1945. Cub Cadet XT Enduro Series tractors are engineered to offer the best combination of quality, value, and performance. Cub Cadet lawn and garden tractors offer comfort and year-round versatility. Stop by our stores to help find your next Cub Cadet or visit us online at Weingarts.com. From our family to yours, thank you for letting us serve you.
Weingarts, everything from lawn to snow.
This time of year, the flowers are blooming and the trees are blossoming. God's whole creation is singing in harmony, and at Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, it's Jeep season. For example, you can drive a new Jeep Compass for as low as $369 per month. Jeep Cherokees start at $536 per month, and Jeep Grand Cherokees are as little as $399 per month. Stop in for all the details today. Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram will treat you with the dignity and respect you deserve. Or shop online at PinckneyChrysler.com.
The following is a medical moment.
Hi, I'm Bobby Schindler, brother of Terry Schiavo. The American Medical Association says informed consent to medical treatment is a fundamental right established in both medical ethics and U.S. law. Patients have the right to receive information and ask questions about recommended treatments so that they can make well-considered decisions about care. When speaking with a patient regarding different procedures and care options, a physician must give accurate information about the diagnosis, treatment, benefits, and risk, and allow the patient to ask questions. Ensure the patient understands the consequences of the treatment alternatives and decide if the patient is capable of making decisions with a sound mind. Document the informed consent conversation and the patient's or their healthcare agent's treatment decision. It is vital to have a healthcare agent who is aware of all your wishes, values, and medical information so that your wishes are respected in the event you are not able to make these decisions at some point.
This medical moment brought to you by MyLifeAngels.com.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Garendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling. 40 years of experience, 17,000 current students, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plan, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right, pretty much everything. My wife and I use Seton. Some of our children. Tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT. Over 30% higher on English and reading on the ACT. It's a rigorous program. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to SetonHome.org. That is SetonHome.org. www.homeschoolingforhealth.org.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. With me, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, continuing our look at a number of, a kind of a potpourri of Catholic stories. We started out with the Illinois Attorney General report. Says nearly 2,000 were victims of clergy sex abuse over a 70-year period, and the discrepancy between the church's numbers that were submitted to the archdiocese, to the Attorney General, and the numbers that the Attorney General came up with. We also have been talking about the Los Angeles Dodgers' really disgraceful honoring of this obscene group called the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. One also talking about this new survey that's come out, where only about half of Americans now say that they're certain that God exists. But I wanted to get to this drama story down in Mexico. What can you tell me about this murder attempt on the archbishop there?
So a knife-wielding man who was 80 years old attempted to kill Archbishop Faustino Armendariz of Durango, Mexico. And it actually occurred, or the attack took place in the sacristy after the noon mass. Now, the archbishop thanked God on Twitter. Of course, that's where we always thank God now for these things. He was attacked because, you know, people would wander back to the sacristy to say hello. And he's very pastoral, and that's what people do. And suddenly, he was violently attacked. And he was fine, which is a good thing. But I think this is consistent, as we are seeing all over the place now, that the church is not just under assault, but our leaders, our priests, and all of our fellow Catholics are now under assault. And this is an unusual incident in the sense that it's generally acknowledged that Durango itself is not one of those truly violent places. But I appreciated the fact that the bishops of Mexico moved very quickly to express what they called solidarity and repudiation of the attack, even though it does not seem to be part, at least at this point, of an organized attempt. Now, Armendariz has had his run-ins with organized crime as he went about his business in the archdiocese, which is a chronic problem as well throughout all of Mexico. So as far as we can tell, this is an isolated incident that isn't related to a larger conspiracy, but it is also worth noting that on that very same day, Father Javier Garcia Villafana, an Augustinian priest, was murdered in the state of Michoacán in Mexico. So the violence just continues.
And do we know with any certainty what the motive was in the second instance with Father Javier Garcia Villafana?
No, other than he was apparently murdered in his car while traveling. So, I mean, the reality is that violence is everywhere, and it's statistics tell us something, that this is the ninth Catholic priest to be murdered since the current president of Mexico, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, took office at the end of 2018. Now, we're not saying that he's responsible in any way, but it gives us an idea. If we're using that as just a benchmark, we're seeing, again, these attacks on priests, attacks on churches. Now, we can extend, we don't have outright murders, but let's remember that also across the United States, we had a wave and continue to have a wave of arsons and attacks on statues and vandalism on churches, on pregnancy centers. So the levels of hostility toward religion, as we were just talking, are only going to increase. And I think all of us need to be even more vigilant in that regard.
Switch gears and go to Missouri, where there is a claim of an incorrupt body. This is something that came out of the blue. I had no idea this story was even in the pipeline. So this is the body, apparently, I mean, they've got pilgrims already, hundreds of pilgrims descending on the Benedictine Monastery.
Well, this is reported by Kelsey Wicks, who is the executive director of the ASSI Group. So she is the administrator of all of our international agencies.
Okay.
And she's also a dogged reporter. And she's the one who actually first broke this story, I believe. And it was the exhumation of Sister Wilhelmina Lancaster, who is the founder or foundress of the Benedictine Sisters of Mary, Queen of the Apostles. And now, for those who may not be familiar with them, I believe they were part of a group that did a Gregorian chant and album back in at some point. The sisters were founded in 1995 by Sister Wilhelmina at the age of 70. Mm-hmm. And she was part of the Oblate Sisters of Providence, her community of over 50 years. She left them to establish this new community. And she died at the age of 95 in 2019. And so here we were on the Solemnity of the Ascension. And the sisters and the new abbess decided to move her body from where she was initially buried to a more formal final resting place inside the monastery chapel. And what they discovered was not just a set of remains, but apparently an intact body. And
had it not been embalmed, right? I mean,
that's correct. So now, what makes this even more interesting is that there was a crack that had settled right down the middle of the coffin, and so for years, apparently, moisture, dirt, and everything else had made its way into this coffin, and the body itself had what was described as a layer of mold, obviously from the high levels of condensation and everything else, but almost nothing of the body had disintegrated over the course of 4 years. Neither had her habit.
Oh, that's now, I mean, that's amazing. I you know, at first glance, this looks miraculous. I don't know all the physics involved here.
Exactly. Right.
But it certainly is worthy of note.
Yes, I think that you said it exactly right, Al, that the name that everybody is thinking is Incorruptible.
Yeah.
And there is this beautiful legacy and tradition in the church of incorrupt saints. And, I mean, they've been documented forever.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to always be careful and exercise great prudence in how we classify those types of claims, and we would include this story in that. But I think it's a story that's of note in part. The way it's been described is it's a beautiful sign, and in that sense, I think it's helpful for us to contemplate that. That here was. It gives us an opportunity to reflect on the remarkable life of Sister Wilhelmina.
Yeah, yeah.
And in that sense, let's have at it. I mean, this is these are the stories that, in some ways, that Pope Francis talks about, you know, the unknown saints.
Right.
And I'm not saying that we don't know if there will be a cause for canonization open and all of that. I just mean in the way that Francis describes it, is that there are people who live and have lived among us who led extraordinary lives that we will never know about.
Right.
And I think it's safe to say that Sister Wilhelmina led an extraordinary life. And from that standpoint, this is worth celebrating.
I love the reporting of Mother Cecilia, who's the current abbess of the community there. She says it was her role to examine, you know, what was in the coffin first as they went about the exhumation and movement. And she said the body was covered in a layer of mold, like you said. And despite the dampness, little of her body and nothing of her habit disintegrated during the 4 years. And she says, I thought I saw a completely full, intact foot. And I said, no, I didn't just see that. So I looked again more carefully. After she looked again, she screamed aloud, I see her foot! And the community just cheered. I mean, That must have been a tremendous moment for the all the sisters gathered there.
Well, and then the practical aspect, she says, you can't Google what to do with an incorrupt body, she said. So,
that's good.
So we started, she said, with the basics, just cleaning her with hot water, because clinging to her face is a mask of thick mold. But she said it so beautifully, too, that she said that this is a sign. Maybe I should think about God. It's a sign of things to come with the supernatural of our last end, heaven, hell, and purgatory.
Yeah.
She said perhaps he protected that body and that habit to enkindle our faith, to rekindle it, to bring people back to the faith. And that's these little signs in the face of so much of what we're seeing today are things that we need to talk about, but also things that we need to help people to understand. We just talked about that belief in God is declining. Well, these are moments. Miracles are real for us as a faith, and the sacraments are real, and we need to remind people of that.
It's very interesting to note, too, in the history of theology, that after the various Protestant reformations, there was a lot of dismissing of the Catholic emphasis on the current supernatural. Many Protestant leaders were suspicious of shrines, monasteries, sacred art, and there was a real effort to, within these Protestant leaders, to minimize you might say the supernatural intrusions into life. I'm not saying they were anti-supernaturalists, because they certainly believed in the resurrection of Jesus. So I want to make that clear. But they were concerned about what they thought of as Catholic folk religion, and and we've all seen superstition too. So we know there are real problems here.
But what the Protestants did also was to help open the door for the Age of Enlightenment.
That's right.
The Age of Rationalism that did actually dismiss.
That's right.
The sacraments and miracles as the product of a fevered imagination, and now we're seeing this as nothing more an attempt to control people and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So you're right. I think between the Protestants and the reformers, intentionally or not, and then the Age of Rationalism and the Enlightenment, I think we have lost in some ways a sense of the miraculous and the sacred.
Yeah, I think it's important for these stories to be told. I think it's important to tell them in ways that respects the rules of evidence. But I just think her response when she saw this intact foot was to, just scream, and the community cheered. Now, we don't know what the ultimate determination will be, but it's living in the light of that expectation that God is alive, and that sanctity has its fruit that can often be seen in these supernatural or preternatural manifestations. So, this is a great story.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, look, I hear the music coming right up. So. Well, anyways, Matthew, thanks for taking the time.
A good story to end on. Always
it is a good one.
To be with you.
All right, we'll talk again. Dr. Matthew Bunsen, I'm Al Cresta.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Do people really help each other every 2 minutes? I'm Chuck Gatica, and this is Journey Strong. According to researchers at UCLA, they do. We do. The good news is that acts of kindness, especially the small ones, are more frequent and universal than we might think. Research suggests that being helpful is ingrained in us. We're wired this way by God. Don't underestimate the power of these random acts of kindness. Being nice to someone can move them deeply. You feel good helping, too. Acts of charity are encouraged by the Catholic Church. Maybe you serve at a shelter or just take time to listen to a friend. Pope Francis once said that charity is the embrace of God our Father to every man, especially to the least and the suffering. What will your random act of kindness be today? Check out the Journey Strong tab for more on this at the homepage of AveMariaRadio.net.
In Morse code, the sequence SOS is a distress call when someone's in trouble. It's been said that SOS stands for Save Our Souls. Well, right now, the world is in deep trouble, and we're putting out an SOS call for help. Will you answer the call? St. Paul Evangelization has hundreds of teams of evangelists that go out and share the good news with souls that are in danger of being lost. Visit streetevangelization.com and find a team near you so you can answer that distress call.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Thank you for being with me as we looked over a number of stories that are of interest to Catholics. And it's wonderful to have Matthew as a resource that we can turn to. We try to get together at least once a week to go over some of these stories, kind of play catch-up. The stories themselves may not always be worth a whole segment, but we can pile a bunch of them together, and it really makes for, I think, good conversation. But you can follow up on all of them by going to AveMariaRadio.net and go to the Cresta Guest Archives there, and you'll be able to locate articles from Catholic News Service, Catholic News Agency, National Catholic Register, follow up on some of these stories. Now, coming up in the next hour, we're going to share with you a conversation I had with Raymond Ibrahim not too long ago, but it's one that I think is important for us to keep in mind. We just talked about religious persecution around the world about 2 weeks ago with Ed Clancy from Aid to the Church in Need, and that's because there's been a recent report which has highlighted some of the worst spots in the around the world where there are affronts to religious liberty. We're going to take a look at historic instances of it, the Christian heroes who stood against Islam. Raymond Ibrahim, my guest, this is a powerful topic, introducing us to a lot of characters we may not know. I'm Al Cresta. Stay with me.
This time of year, the flowers are blooming and the trees are blossoming. God's whole creation is singing in harmony, and at Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, it's Jeep season. For example, you can drive a new Jeep Compass for as low as $369 per month. Jeep Cherokees start at $536 per month, and Jeep Grand Cherokees are as little as $399 per month. Stop in for all the details today. Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram will treat you with the dignity and respect you deserve. Or shop online at PinckneyChrysler.com.
The Doctor is in on Ave Maria Radio.
Let's lower your frustration quotient. No more, I've had enough. I'll teach you how to stay calmer, how to be a really cool parent, and everybody looks at you in great admiration. Listen in to The Doctor is in.
Dr. Ray Guarendi, weekdays at 1 on Ave Maria Radio.
This is Life News Radio. I'm Jim Anderson. South Carolina Governor Henry McMaster will soon sign a 6-week heartbeat abortion ban. He called a special session to pass the legislation, which also requires parental child support starting at conception, but which also contains popular exceptions for rape and incest. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is expected to announce his run for the presidency via Twitter on Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. On Monday, he addressed a gathering of Christian media providers and touted his leadership on Florida's heartbeat abortion ban. DeSantis said signing the law that protects an unborn child with a detectable heartbeat is the right thing to do. President Trump, meanwhile, continues defending rape and incest exceptions as something necessary to win elections. This is Life News Radio. In Arizona, Planned Parenthood is essentially